flexible you are. It's not about flexibility. It's just that you're activating, stimulating, poking, and prodding your tissue and every part of your body and being into life.
Inhale.
Connection listeners, are you poking and prodding your way to greater enlightenment, or are you just in it for the abs? We're making the Yoga Connection this hour, and we want you to join the conversation. 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. That's 1-800-423-TALK. The guy you heard on that tape is one of my studio guests today. He's Baron Baptiste, founder and director of Baptiste Power Yoga Institute in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Welcome. Also with me is Patricia Walden, co-founder of the BKS Iyengar Yoga Center in Somerville, Massachusetts. Thank you both for joining us here. Connection listeners, I can tell you that earlier Patricia was in a half lotus, but now they're both sitting fully square to the table. Baron Baptiste, can I start with you? First of all, I'd like to know how you two got hooked into yoga. And I mean, that very different type of yoga we were hearing on that cassette there. But how did you get hooked, Baron?
Well, not by choice. I was actually born into a yoga family. My parents opened the first yoga studio or center in San Francisco in the early 1950s. My parents would drag me to India each year, once or twice for months at a time. And we would go around and visit the different teachers and ashrams and yogic health institutes. And I was kind of resistant. I mean, I went along and it was fine, but I was young. It was started at about 10 years old. But I actually have photos of me at like 5, 6, 7 years old doing different yoga positions, poses. And as I grew in my life, I went through a rebellious stage where I left it all behind. But as I began to come into the stresses of life, probably 18, 19, 20 years old, when reality started hitting me, I felt the pressures building, the stresses of life. And I thought, you know, I have answers in me.
Well, tell me first of all about power yoga. What is power yoga?
It's a generic term. You know, power yoga, you could call it, I don't know, you could call it mashed potatoes.
If you obey,
it's really the content.
I'm going to make you get
okay.
up and do it.
It's the content that's important. But power yoga, I think in people's minds, it equates a more physical style, more athletic, more of a fitness kind of yoga. And I think for Americans in general, that feels more safe, more accessible. And if you lead to the content behind the term power yoga, at least my take on it, my thrust, my approach, what I teach is an accessible form of yoga. I've taken from many traditions of yoga. I appreciate many of them. And I've kind of melded and blended and found what's real and true for myself. And then I share that. And as I've lived the principles of yoga, they've become more and more real for me. And therefore, I have a fire in me that I have to share what I love.
You talk the yoga talk, but, I mean, you're built like a quarterback.
I'll take that as a compliment, I'll tell you.
Well, Patricia Walden, what do you think about that? I mean, is it about bodybuilding and power yoga as well?
I think hatha yoga can be different things for different people. I know when I started doing yoga in the late 60s, early 70s, I was also in San Francisco, not born there, but went there as part of the hippie thing, and I was on the tail end of that. And I was searching. I was doing many different things. I was in college. I was dancing. I was kind of exploring, you would say, my inner self. I was reading Alan Watts and Aldous Huxley, and I was a fan of Timothy Leary's. And
yeah, it was a great mishmash. You throw in Hermann Hesse and a bit of Arabic culture as well.
Yeah.
did it become clear to you where yoga fit? I mean, was yoga all part of that mishmash, or was it the one that came out?
Well, it was the one that came out for me, but because I was part of the 60s generation, I wasn't really interested in what yoga could do for my body. I didn't even think of my body. I thought, oh, I will do yoga for 2 months and I'll reach enlightenment. Of course, that was very naive. I thought if I stood in my head for 30 minutes a day that, oh, I'm going to reach samadhi, I'm going to reach enlightenment. So I was interested in transformation of consciousness during that time.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Baron Baptiste, I'm must admit I've not been to many yoga classes, but when I did, the great thing about them was I usually fell asleep at the end of them. It was so
That's
restful.
Right.
Your yoga classes don't sound like that is the end aim.
No, I would say that is the end aim, but not falling asleep. Because,
or collapsing,
you know,
through exhaustion?
Look, I would look at it like this. We go through life and we soak it up like a sponge. And the forces of life are powerful. The forces of stress and pressures of life are powerful. And we take that in, we hold that in our emotional bodies, our muscular body. And to have a strong yogic practice, meaning to move, to breathe at a vigorous level, that's like rinsing out your sponge. And at the end of a hour or 90-minute practice, you feel deeply restful and relaxed. But it's not falling asleep, because falling asleep is going into the unconscious. And what we want is to bring you into more of a conscious, heightened state of awareness. Mm-hmm. So you're deeply relaxed, but it's an alert, relaxed quality. Mm-hmm. And that's euphoria. Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't work very well on radio, obviously, but right. I'm really trying to come to terms with what exactly it is you do. I mean, could you just take your headphones and show me a movement that you might do that would be different than...
Yeah, I mean, well, let me see if I can put it into words. Unless if you really want to see and describe it, but what I would say is they are simple movements done like lunges, forward bends,
fast
back bends. Oh, not necessarily fast, not like an aerobics class. It's what we call vinyasa. It's called flow. So it's fluid, it's liquid. Every movement is matched with the breath. The focus, though, is, you know, ultimately Buddha said everything is mind. If you want to change your body, well, start working on with your mind. Start a change of heart. Looking at your body, relating to your body with more love, with more compassion, with more intuition, that will change your body. Your perception of yourself and your body, that will change it. And you don't need to work hard. What I do is I raise the high bar. I will challenge people to work hard. But I say, you know, everybody in this room, there are 5 billion bodies on this earth. We're all completely unique. Honor your uniqueness. Do what you can at your level, with whatever fitness level you may have, and I show you how to modify these more vigorous movements, and you start where you are, and eventually you start growing and changing, but it requires a willingness of the spirit. Personal growth has to be at your core to change, really, even your body.
Patricia Walden, is it about the body, is it about the spirit? You said that when you were a hippie, you went into it because you wanted to use yoga to mm-hmm. find your spirituality. Have you sort of cast that aside now?
No, not at all. I think that doing yoga can affect every aspect of your being. If you come to yoga and you want to lose weight, it can do that. If you come to yoga because you want to get stronger or more flexible, it can do that. If you're feeling depressed and you want to use yoga to uplift your depression, it can do that. If you have cramps during your period, it can do that.
But are these just welcome side effects, or is this the whole point? Surely yoga, as it was first conceived, mm-hmm. was not a weight loss method.
No, it wasn't. It definitely wasn't. But it depends on what your reasons are for doing it, and it can touch your physical body, or if you're interested in a spiritual connection, it can give you that. It depends on what you want from it. It can touch every aspect of human life and existence.
How does your kind of yoga, Iyengar mm-hmm. yoga, differ from Barron's type of yoga?
Probably a little more static. We don't work as much with vinyasa.
Define vinyasa?
Vinyasa is putting a series of poses together in a flowing like pattern, and Iyengar yoga is more focused on alignment, and we don't move quickly from pose to pose. We stay a little bit longer, although I have to say that it can be a workout if you choose to make it one. If you stand in a proud warrior pose, which is a standing pose with one leg bent, that is a cardiovascular workout. It's definitely challenging physically.
Is it becoming all things to all men, Barron? I mean, is it still got a unique identity, yoga?
Oh, well, certainly it does. I mean, it There's so many different styles, mm-hmm. and I think different styles speak to different people. Mm-hmm. And so different people will be attracted to maybe what I do, a vinyasa, mm-hmm. where you do sweat and you mm-hmm. do, you know, more of a paced, you know, moving one movement into the next, kind of a meditation in motion. Mm-hmm. And I think that it becomes what you make of it. Some people come to yoga initially because, yeah, they want to tone their abs, thighs, and buns, but then they kind of get hit over the head with, wow, there is so much more here. Mm-hmm. It is so multi-dimensional, and it works on so many levels, and you don't even know it. You right. lay down your yoga mat, a little 6-foot by 2-foot mat, and you go through this profound experience. Mm-hmm. And there's something about going into a yoga pose, being put in your body into a yoga pose and breathing, that takes you out of your head. Mm-hmm. We live in our heads, we get stuck in our heads, and that can be hell on earth. Mm-hmm. When you come into your whole body, just by coming into a yoga pose, start breathing, you come out of your head, you come into your body, suddenly you have peace. Suddenly you have mental space. And it's a brainwashing. I mean, people say, do you brainwash people? Sounds like you're brainwashing people. I say, absolutely I brainwash people. Thank God we Americans need their brains washed.
But Patricia, isn't it true that if you do half an hour exercise, it releases all these pheromones, whatever they are anyway, and you feel much more cheerful? Is it more than that?
I think it's much more than that. I think, for example, if we start with one truth, which I say is one of the cornerstones of yoga practice, what you do with your body, the different shapes that you put your body in have effect on your mind and your physiology. With every thought, every feeling, every position you put your body in, you're either strengthening or weakening your physiology, and this brings about different mental states. If you're feeling low energy, lethargic, kind of sad, if you do a backbend practice, your mood changes. On the other hand, if you're feeling anxiety, which many people feel today with so many different pressures,
I'm told that many people are feeling very anxious because, you know, they've got so many yoga classes in a week and they're trying to get to them, involved in road rage on the way there.
Keeping up with everything that life puts out there, we end up feeling fragmented. And yoga is a way to bring a calm center to whatever you're doing in your life. You can do it from a very centered and calm place.
And is there a particular American style of yoga that, yeah, you get in your tracksuit, you whiz down to the yoga center, you knock back your double cappuccino, probably your tofu burger.
There is that way of doing it if you choose to. Some of us who are more traditional choose not to do it that way, but, you know, that's definitely a way. But hopefully, even if you do it that way, you are still working with that calm center inside of yourself that you bring to all your activities.
Well, you're both looking very, very calm in the studio today. We're talking yoga this hour to a disco or an aerobic beat. Are the Eastern gurus rolling their eyes or indeed rolling in their graves? 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection on NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Coming up on Here and Now at Noon, a profile of Lieutenant Governor Jane Swift and a...
And that's the one-time material girl, Madonna, from her Ray of Light CD, singing an ancient Sanskrit chant and doing her part for Yoga Chic. Baron Baptiste is one of my guests today, founder and director of Baptiste Power Yoga Institute of Cambridge, Massachusetts. Also here, Patricia Walden, co-founder of the BKS Iyengar Yoga Center. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK to join the yoga conversation. But let's go first to my third guest today, Pandit Rajmani Tigunayat. Pandit Rajmani Tigunayat, welcome to the program. He's spiritual head of the Himalayan International Institute in Holmesdale, Pennsylvania. Pandit Rajmani Tigunayat, you've been listening to the program so far, power, yoga, doing your own thing in yoga. Tell me about your style of yoga.
My style of yoga, Judy, is ancient style, more traditional, where we do not focus only on the body, rather our main focus is on the mind. And that's what the traditional yoga is all about, where the mastery over the mind, or let's say mastery over the modifications of the mind, is the main core of yoga. And all other components of yoga, let's say hatha yoga or breathing or everything, centers around working on mind.
Is it a discipline of the body to sort of get control so that you can free the mind? I mean, can you explain the idea behind it?
Yeah, it is more like working with the mind, but since body and mind cannot be separated from each other, and therefore certainly first you have to start with body, but you start in a manner that body becomes a tool, a vehicle to work with your mind, you know. And that is the basic belief is that body is like a living shrine. And in this living shrine, there are infinite potentials, infinite energy, the power hidden in the body. And if we work with the body, then this power is released. And then this power can help us become a healthier and happier person, both at the level of body as well as mind. And once we are happy and healthy, then we have plenty of time and energy to explore the inner dimensions of life, where then that is where our actual journey, spiritual journey, begins, to this inner shrine.
So tell me, what do you think happened that the ancient practitioners of yoga, or the modern ones, but the purists like yourself, were practicing this art to develop their spirituality, and somebody noticed that they happened to have glorious bodies as well?
Glorious body in the sense, not really that your body begins to shine or you emit neon light, you know. But rather, yes, certainly you feel lightness in your body, and you are no longer dragging your body. Rather, you feel that you are enjoying your body, and all the limbs and organs, and especially your endocrine gland system, nervous system, they are in very good shape, so that you are not carrying this body as a burden. Rather, you are actually able to use the body as a tool to fly in the vast realm of consciousness.
Pandu, we'll get the answer from my two guests, but I think there's a questioner, a caller on the line who'd very much like to talk to you. The number, by the way, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Jason, I think you probably have a question for Pandit Rajamani Tigunayat, haven't you?
Yes, I have, and I'm glad to hear that third guest introduced. My question goes to what could be called, or has been called by Western scholars, a sort of a fusion between Buddhism and the practices of yoga. The two historical figures that I have heard mentioned and read a little bit of are Tilopa and Naropa. And I believe they journeyed into the Himalayas in the early centuries A.D. You know, early Western analysis of Buddhism would say that this was some sort of a syncretic religion that took from traditional Indian physical practices as well as Buddhism. But I just would like to know a little bit more from the guru about the history of this and what the two elements have to complement each other with.
Thank you for that, Jason. Let's Pandit Rajamani Tigunayat, can you answer Jason's point?
Yes. I'm so glad that, Jason, you are asking such a profound question. Historically, Buddhism and yoga have been like a parallel flowing stream, and there has not been really much difference. As far as the philosophy goes, yes, there is a difference between Buddhist ideas and yogic ideas. Buddhist ideas are more toward, like, let's say, nihilism or idealism and those things. But yoga, according to yoga, the world is real and really exists. But that is philosophical difference. In reality, when it comes to practice, both of them are so close to each other that, in fact, when you read the classical yoga text, such as Yoga Sutra, you find Buddhist teachings and Buddhist ideas so perfectly blended in yogic tradition. And same is the truth with Buddhist side. That in Buddhist, among the Buddhist, practitioners, such as like the names you are mentioning, Naropa and Milarepa and Sarepa, these masters, they really didn't care what is Buddhism and what is yoga. They cared what is good for them and what is good for the society. And therefore, they were they started as eclectic, you know, practitioners, but their effort was to gather the best of the best from all possible sources and blend them in a such a perfect manner that it can become the most effective and practical path for spiritual development and well-being.
Jason, can I ask you, do you actually practice yoga, and do you regard it as part of your spirituality, or seek for your search for Buddhism?
Well, I attend teachings that are taught by Tibetan masters. There's one in Cambridge, and the way that it's presented to us, we study the Buddhism first, and the yoga is sort of treated as I'm not saying that they are secretive about it, but they don't present the higher teachings so much to beginning students. They sort of want you to get your head straight before you worry about, because they deal with the yogas that they deal with, as I understand them, involve visualizations and things like that aren't necessarily germane to the practices of beginners. But I relish the opportunity as it presents itself in the future.
Jason, thanks very much for that. Baron Baptiste, power yoga guru. I mean, do most of your students think that way, or do they think, oh, no, don't want all this Buddhism stuff, religious stuff, you know, we want to come there like an exercise class?
Well, you know, I think Americans in general have a level of dissatisfaction. And when you have a level of dissatisfaction in your life, it causes you to seek answers, to seek growth, higher ground. The issue I take with traditional yoga and teachings very often is that it's so intellectualized that it doesn't speak to people where they live in their lives in America, the stresses and pressures of just surviving, financial pressures, relationships, all that. You can be a yoga sutra thumper just like you can be a Bible thumper.
I was going to say, do they want a quick physical fix? They don't want to do the heavy lifting. I'm meaning the heavy reading.
No, I don't think it's about that. I think it's about a change of heart. It's because you can regurgitate verses and chapters, and it's head-to-head. But if you can speak to people, to their hearts, to their souls, in a way that is relevant and makes sense and it's real, and as a teacher you speak from an authentic place of your own experience, that speaks to people. I have thousands of students because I speak from my own experience. I'm not standing up on a pedestal, putting myself above everyone, saying verses and chapters of scripture that I've memorized that doesn't really reach people. So my take on it is that give people a workout, because as the pundit said, we need to work our bodies. We need a fitness level. We need to keep our temples clean. But also speak to the heart of people where they live, not a bunch of intellectual gobbledygook that they don't really understand.
Pandit Rajmani Tigganayak, can I ask you, do you think it can happen the other way around, that you start doing the physical stuff and it leads to spiritual enlightenment?
Yes, certainly. You start from the physical and then it takes you to spiritual enlightenment. You cannot really ignore the body. Body is the first and the foremost tool to begin with. And not only begin with, rather all the way to, as long as you are alive, this is the tool that you must keep in good shape. But at the same time, you do not become a servant to this tool itself and just keep polishing and keep refining and keep sharpening the tool and never get chance to use this tool for your inner development.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Suzanne joins us from Louisville, Kentucky. Suzanne.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a comment, actually, for all of you, which I'm very interested in your show and what you're talking about. But the one thing I want to make sure that people are aware of is that yoga is not a miracle drug. You can't just go into a yoga class and all of a sudden you're no longer depressed, you're spiritually revived. You have to mentally prepare yourself for accepting what yoga does and allows you to reflect on. And I thought, I think it's important to let your listeners know that, as well as maybe you can give us some tips on how we can start mentally preparing ourselves when we're in a yoga class.
Well, Patricia, you take the first point. You know, you've got to be mentally prepared.
Well, I think one of the most important things to know when you go to a class is that it's not a competitive sport. that a good teacher will help you to accept exactly where you are and take you gracefully and thoughtfully through a group of asanas. And the most important thing is to accept where you are and not to be goal-oriented, so it doesn't become like other activities that you do in your life. And remember that asana is a gateway to the mind, or poses are gateway to the mind and to the soul. And the real reason that we do asana is for self-understanding, not for stronger biceps or more flexible hamstrings.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Suzanne, thanks for that. Let's take Elizabeth. Elizabeth, hello. What's your point today?
Hello, good morning. Excuse me, I'm laughing because Patricia has just said the things that I wanted to say so much about my experience with yoga. I've had the great privilege and pleasure of working with Patricia over the years, and what struck me most about yoga is it is about doing what you can do, what your body can do. And I've been struck by the different body types. You folks talked about that initially, about how we tend to think of certain people doing yoga as looking a certain way. But in our classes, there are people with all different body types who can do a varied, such varied poses and have such varied abilities. The piece I wanted to address most was the compassion that I found in yoga. That teachers bring, particularly at the center where I've worked. And I'm curious about yoga teachers and how one who, particularly people who aren't familiar with yoga, because I do talk to my friends about it and encourage people to try it, even those who've never done any exercise at all, because it does meet you where you are. How does one choose a type of yoga, or particularly a teacher?
Okay, Patricia, I mean, how would you, well, she's a pupil of yours, you'd say, choose me, and I've got this ringing endorsement, and come on down to my place. But I mean, seriously, presumably there are horses for courses. Take an A-type person. Mm-hmm. If you're a really hyper person, mm-hmm. you know, it's a very restful yoga what you need, or do you need to hype yourself up?
No, I think that's an excellent point. If you are a hyper person, you can't expect to lie down in Shavasana and relax. You have to do something with that hyper energy. So that person might
kick
need
the cat before you come.
Yeah,
to
you might need a stronger workout to begin with in order to reap the wonderful fruits of a Shavasana or a lying down pose. You have to do something with that hyper energy.
Baron Baptiste, did you gear power yoga for the A-type individual, knowing that no American is going to come into a class and say, oh, yeah, chill out, lie down, put my legs into a pretzel and get on down there?
Yeah, no. You know, I again, teach from what speaks to me, what's true for me. I'm a physical, athletic guy. I like to move my body. I like to move, breathe, sweat, but in a meditative context. So I teach basically what I practice and what's been true to me. To answer that question of, well, why do certain people go to different teachers, I think, again, people will try classes, and they'll find a teacher that speaks to them. For me, it's not about, yoga's really not about promotion. It's about attraction.
Well, let's hear from the purists, Pandit Rajmani Tigunayak. Can I ask you, a lot of people's image of the pure form of yoga is men who stand on one leg for years, a discipline, even a pain. I mean, is that part of it?
No, not really. That is a very extreme kind of thing, you know. And those who stand on one leg for a couple of years, you can see how terrible they are feeling.
but tell me, what we're talking about?
If we can really learn how to walk properly on our 2 feet, that is Kali Yoga.
Yeah, I would rather not stand on one leg for several years either. But Penny, could I ask you, what sort of pupils come to you? I mean, are they scholars or are they people pursuing the body beautiful?
No, not really scholar. Rather, at our institute here, people come seeking the both physical and mental well-being and to learn basically Hatha Yoga in the context of meditation. And that's why when they come here, we try to understand, we try to study their body and their mind and whatever is the best set of yoga exercises. That's what we advise them and we teach them. And we teach yoga in a manner that yoga becomes a stepping stone for practicing meditation and relaxation, concentration. Mm-hmm.
Tell me, can you be a Christian, a Jew, a Muslim, and appreciate yoga, or if you really pursue it to its correct end? I mean, do you have to take the religious baggage with it?
Not at all. Religious baggage, in fact, actually defeats the purpose. What yoga does, or meditation does, it simply introduces you to yourself. When you are practicing Hatha Yoga introduces you to your body. You come to know what your body is and what are the needs and necessities of your body. And when you start including the breathing exercises in your Hatha Yoga, then you can understand yourself even at a deeper level. And when you incorporate meditation in it, then you understand your inner, makeups, that what you are made of in terms of your thoughts, feelings, behaviors, and your own, perception and worldview and attitude toward yourself and toward others.
Dare I suggest that maybe you have cut your cloth a bit to suit the American audience as well? I mean, are you speaking with the mouth of your fellow yogis back in India, or have you adjusted slightly?
I'm correct. I have adjusted quite well, and I adjusted even long before I came here, because that's what I found there, that when they teach in fellow yogis in India, when they teach yoga in the context of Hinduism, it turns into rituals. And people like me, even in India, when I was in the college, I was really kind of rebellious, and I did not like that. I was searching for something which is good and helpful to me.
I think rebellion seems to be the theme of you, yes. Yoga people. Not at all the image I would have thought of. Pandit Rajmani Tegunayat, thank you very much for joining us on the program. So, Om, or get up, get on down, twist and turn, chill out and feel the burn. Have yoga lovers in the West lost the plot? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection on NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Coming up on Here and Now at Noon, among other things, they'll be talking about U.S.-Canadian trade relations.
This is the yoga connection, but not as Eastern gurus or aging Western hippies would know it. This is hyper yoga to burn the flab, not focus the mind. Or can it do both? Has East met West and got the best of both worlds? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. My guest today, a Baron Baptiste, founder and director of Baptiste Power Yoga. Patricia Walden, co-founder of the BKS Iyengar Yoga Center. And we're joined now by Elizabeth Wipf, who's creative yoga director of Crunch Fitness in New York City. Elizabeth Wipf, welcome to the program. So yet another kind of yoga. Tell us about yours.
Say that again?
Tell us about your style of yoga.
My particular style of yoga is vinyasa-based, very eclectic. I draw on... I think there's something in the water in San Francisco. I too grew up in San Francisco. And I'm sort of, I think, the new generation of yogi. I'm in my 20s and found the vinyasa style when I got to New York and really fell in love with it. And that's primarily what we teach at Crunch.
You set yoga music to disco live music, is that right?
Well, we have one class on the schedule, which is called Disco Yoga, which was sort of the great inspiration of Dana Flynn, who is my teacher and who was my predecessor at Crunch. Sort of because, especially for New Yorkers, yoga has become so many things, as you all have been saying the whole hour. And music is one way to connect to yourself, and fabulous music, disco music, whatever, R&B, is, if that's what inspires you to get up and move your body and connect to yourself.
And yoga for jocks, tell us about that.
That is a name that we came up with to get people into classes that may not necessarily have taken some of the more aggressive classes that they thought might be for people who were quote-unquote flexible, What it sort of ended up being is a regular yoga class that is open, more open to, newer people spends a little bit more time on alignment.
Elizabeth, at what point do you stop calling yourself a yogi and just call yourself some other sort of discipline? I mean, you know, if it's yoga to disco music, jock yoga, not necessarily stretching yourself, is it still
it's
yoga?
All yoga. The content of the class is basically the same. It's really, you know, as a gym in an urban setting, we need to find ways to make the practice more accessible to people, you know, to open up the classes to people who want a little variety. I mean, we have almost 100 classes a week on our schedule. So, you know, we need to offer there sometimes when people may not want a Jiva Mukti or a Kundalini, you know. That might be a little bit too out there for them. So this is a way in an urban setting to kind of open it up. But really the content of the class, the intention of the class is exactly the same as the other classes.
But tell me, I gather that you are not that impressed with power yoga.
Actually, that's not true. I think that, as Baron Baptiste said at the beginning of the program, it's just a name. I think that sort of because most Americans are sort of confused about all these different names and styles, power yoga is something that they can sort of, an icon, a name they can kind of attach to. But power yoga, vinyasa yoga, jiva mukti yoga, ashtanga yoga, they're all sort of in the same family. So we don't have a class that is called power yoga.
Baron's shaking his head. Oh, disunity in the ranks.
I wish I could see him.
Sorry, you were saying?
But I do... I mean, if power yoga means a strong, athletic, vinyasa-based class, then that's what we do. But again, it's a name that people have chosen to use for their classes. I don't object to it. We just don't use that name.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. To join the yoga connection, Fred joins us. Fred, you a yoga practitioner?
No, not actually. What I've been doing is for the last few years, I've been practicing on and off transcendental meditation. And I think it's a very similar in the way that you make this sort of mind journey towards an ultimate type of alternate consciousness. And my question is, I think that the enlightenment that they talk about, that they're talking about on your show is pretty much the same thing as these guys with the transcendental meditation are trying to reach. And, you know, I love the benefits I get from this, the great benefits. I mean, you think very clearly after you have a chance to meditate.
So you think it's meditation and spiritual, not about the body?
Right. I'm not into it for the abs or anything like that.
So would you like to ask him how long it takes to get spiritual enlightenment through yoga?
No, the thing is, I don't want to reach spiritual enlightenment. I like to keep my feet on the ground as far as that goes.
One can keep one's feet on the ground and be enlightened.
That's Patricia Walden.
I'm a little skeptical about the whole cosmic consciousness idea, and but it does scare me at the same time. I do enjoy the benefits, but I don't want to reach this ultimate state of yogi where I'm completely enlightened, and that's just the thing. So I'm curious what you guys have to say about that.
Well, Baron, is that what you find from a lot of the people who come to you, that they say, please give me a perfect body, but please, you know, let's do without the spiritual enlightenment?
Yeah, well,
right.
I agree with the caller. I think that people are confused about what enlightenment is, about cosmic consciousness, the sea of bliss. So many terms that you get from, I think a lot of it comes from Hinduism, as the Pandit mentioned earlier. I think that to me, enlightenment, it's the word and light, you know, to be in light, to have light in your life, and to be just light, to light, fun, joy. That's enlightenment to me. It's simple. It's maybe more sober. You know, we talked about I forget her name in New York City, the teacher in New York.
Elizabeth.
At Crunch. Elizabeth mentioned about music or disco to yoga. I mean, to me, that's entering the realm of, like, just dance. It's more about your personality. I mean, certainly, you put disco music in. I would do it, you know, for a class just to have fun. Mm-hmm. But that's more about your personality. You're bringing your personality. And ultimately,
right.
At the core... to reach more of enlightened state, to lighten your load, lighten your burden of life, just to walk a little more lightly, and that's freedom. That's freedom. But to do that, you need some semblance of stillness, some semblance of quiet, some semblance of self-introspection. As Socrates said it, an unexamined life is not worth living. And so, you know, we can have fun with yoga like they're doing at Crunch and Yoga for Jocks and all the rest of it, and that's fine. It opens the door to more people. Mm-hmm. But eventually it's not truly what's going to change you at your core.
Elizabeth Whip, though, can I ask you, do you accept that description that was just thrown away so lightly that you're just about fun?
True.
You know what? If you... Our students are very serious. The Yoga for Jocks and the Disco Yoga are we have three of those classes on the schedule. It's 3 out of 80. So the majority of our classes are more traditional and do encourage a sense of quiet and a sense of developing a relationship with yourself. So I think that we are all on the same page, and I'm just again in an organization that is obviously more commercial, and so we've had to make it accessible to the population who may not want to reach enlightenment.
Have you all benefited, by the way, from the fact that all these stars like Christy Turlington and Kate Moss and Madonna are all sort of making it out to be the next great drug?
I think what that has done is it's brought a lot of younger people to yoga classes. And yes, once stars start doing yoga, it touches the mainstream. I wanted to respond to one thing that I can't remember. Elizabeth was talking about, or indirectly, I'd like to say that one of the most important aspects of a yoga class is the silence and the quiet that comes at the end, because most people go through their day and go through their weeks without ever having a moment alone or 3 minutes of silence. And it's often in the silence after a workout that you really reap the benefits and realize the tremendous gifts and fruits that yoga has to offer. We live on the surface of our lives, and it's in the stillness that we begin to touch the deeper aspects of ourself, and it's healing.
I was going to ask you if it's just a case of giving yourself time, but perhaps our next caller can ask it in a better way. 800-423-8255 is the number. Joanne joins us. Joanne, hello. What's your point?
Hi. A couple things. First of all, I'm really excited about this program. I actually read a Boston Globe magazine article where a couple of your guests were in the article, and this is just so much more colorful to hear this on.
Are you sitting listening to this in the lotus position then?
Oh, yeah.
What's your question, Joanne? Sorry to have thrown it off your stride.
More of a comment. I'm hearing your guests talking more about commonalities and differences, and that all your guests are saying that yoga is about a modification of the mind. They're all saying it's about a change of heart, and it's about more about changing your heart rather than following a dogma or an empty ritual. And they're all saying that people have different needs, and they're going to respond differently to different types of yoga. So
do you think they all go in the same direction ultimately? That they all end up with the same result? All yoga is good, whether it's crunch yoga, power yoga, jock yoga, disco yoga?
Well, I think it's all beneficial.
And you, I presume you are a practitioner, are you?
I do it every day. I'm sorry, every day, yeah. Well, I come at yoga more from the perspective of doing it as a preparation for meditation. But on the other hand, people that I know that do it as a preparation for meditation also will do, you know, are great fans of power yoga.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Joanne, thanks for your call. Let's go straight on to Beth. Beth, hello.
Hello.
Hi, what's your point, Beth?
Well, I have been a yoga practitioner for 25 years now and have practiced many, many styles and teach and now practice Kali Raitra Yoga, which is a very systematized method for all levels. But what I have found through my own experience and through my teachers and my students' experience is that yoga is a path. There's one truth. There are many paths. There are many styles of yoga. There are many religions in the world, but it's a path that reveals inner truth, and you feel the inner truth, and what it does is unleash an energy that exists in the body and gives you power to control that energy for healing, for focus, for whatever you need to do. I mean, that's part of the centering and the practice, the physical practice.
Beth, can I ask you, yes. if you've been practicing for 25 years, is there a sort of snobbishness, the idea that some people are purists and these newcomers who are adding disco beats and building up your abs, that, you know, they're Johnny-come-latelys and they're perverting what's true about yoga?
If they are, and I know Baron has true knowledge of yoga, and I believe people that go to his classes as well and other classes, if they are doing the yoga practices, I believe truth will be revealed. Now, whether disco yoga with blaring music can give you full knowledge of yoga, I think perhaps some other practices. It is
the next generation can tell us. Beth, thank you very much indeed. We're coming to the end of the program. I'd like to just bring in Elizabeth Whipf finally, because Elizabeth, your Jim Crunch is sort of the latest thing. Barron's was the next to last latest thing. Tell me, what do you think is going to be the next trend?
I think that teachers are, as Baron said, you know, the teachers teach from their practice, and what I'm seeing with the teachers here is that they're not only becoming, you know, we have a huge number of teachers, but they're not only becoming stronger teachers, but they're really going deeper into the practice and exploring, you know, alignment and their experience in the practice and bringing it to the students. So I think we're actually going to see a more, for lack of a better word, an intelligence and a wisdom.
Elizabeth Whipf, thank you very much for joining us. My thanks to my other yoga gurus, Baron Baptiste, Patricia Walden, and Pandit Rajmani Tigunayat. We had help today from Glenn Alexander, Kim Bachari, Tom Gilmore, John Hoder, Darren Manoogian, Doug Shugarts, and Ben Walker. The Connection is produced by Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Michael Kavanagh, Alison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tony Randolph, and Christina Russo. Our senior producer and spiritual leader is Graham Smith. You can continue the yoga conversation on our website, theconnection.org. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection.